Blog Talk Radio.
It is January 31st, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. Oh, it's Sunday night, too, by the way. My name is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself, Grant?
I'm just fine and dandy.
That's good, because you have to be both fine and dandy. If you're just fine, then we're questioning it, right?
That's correct. You have to question it.
Okay.
And, right, there you have it.
Yeah,
and
there
each
we
week
have it.
We, right, you do have it, that's for sure.
There's
no doubt
it.
About it in my mind. Yes, you have it. But what it is, the It Girl. In the 1940s, they had the It Girl when they were pinups, right?
They still have the It Girl. You know, if you look on online news and things, they call certain actresses the It Girl now. I don't know who
they are
because I don't keep up with all that stuff.
Yeah, was,
but every once in a while, I see them labeling somebody as the It Girl.
It's probably fashion magazines. And since I don't know, I'll get emails going, "You're so stupid, Grantham." Something like that, right?
I don't know. I would not dare say anything.
See, I almost got into the topic right away, but then you were, I was talking about the It Girl. So I flubbed up again, not getting into my topic-driven mode yet.
What is tonight's topic? What is tonight's topic going to be?
Well, we try to do each week, we talk about the 1930 Geneva Convention, very stimulating political forum, right? And everybody falls asleep immediately with a nice feather pillow, correct?
If you have a feather pillow.
Okay.
Do they still make feather pillows? I guess.
Well, don't you think feather pillows are good?
Well, the only thing with feather pillows, while they're very soft, they're good as long as the quills don't stick out of the pillow and jab you.
Oh, the quills. The quill issue. I see. Well, whatever. For all those people who have feather pillows, make sure you take your quills out. And you can use them as pens, correct? Back in the 17th
exactly.
century.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what they use for pens.
All right. Absolutely. All right, so this week we're going to talk about the 1930 Geneva Convention for a change, right? The bankruptcy. Very exciting topic. It's not negative at all. We're very inspired by the bankruptcy, correct?
I'm sure that it's a throwing topic for one and all.
Yes. Well, it's not my fault. They did it before I was born.
I suppose so. You were born after 1930?
Do I sound that old? I guess so. I am getting pretty crotchety. I guess I have to get out my Zimmer frame pretty soon.
Yes.
And then walk very slowly across crosswalks, right? And drive all the drivers crazy. Drive all the drivers crazy. I like that.
Gosh, I saw someone yesterday going. She precariously just crossed the highway so she could go to a shopping center. And there was all this ice and snowing around. And she was trying. And I was in the car. I couldn't do anything about it. I was in a line of cars that had to move. She was trying to negotiate the ice and the snow, and she's walking with a Zimmer frame. It was, and carrying a bag on top of it. It was really, it was a little bit, everybody was looking at this woman. Yeah, well, everybody was looking at her thinking, what is she doing? But I guess she desperately had to go to the store, or she wouldn't have been out there, but it wasn't the right kind of condition to be walking with a Zimmer frame. Let me say that.
Well, do you think she did it on purpose?
Do I what? I'm sorry?
Do you think she did it on purpose?
Well, I mean, she was an older lady, and maybe she just didn't have any choice. Maybe she had to go to the store and buy groceries or something. You know, it probably wasn't a lark. It was probably something she had to do because she had no other option, is my guess.
Well, I think we should start a show that interviews older people that try to get attention with Zimmer frames.
Well, I've been trying to get attention for years, so I haven't tried the Zimmer frame aspect. That's a thought.
I'll probably get email on that one too. That's okay. Send your cards and letters, even though sending cards and letters are probably not done these days. That's passé. All right, so I'll try to get to the topic, perhaps, which is the idea of we need to get sovereignty to the people, enacted sovereignty. A lot of people argue the point that ordaining sovereignty is okay, it's enough. And I'm trying to say, well, no, it isn't, because we're in a contracts law world, and therefore we need to trump licenses with a contract, which is enacted sovereignty. We have to enact our birthright. So you understand what that means. Maybe you'd like to elaborate a little bit, if you can.
About our birthright?
Right. In other words, enacting it. Yeah, we're ordained sovereign by birth, but that would only work in a non-monetary system. And then, see, people can't imagine what that would be, have a system without money. And it's called indirect trade. Indirect trade system means a non-monetary system. But people can't even imagine what that would be. And I'm saying, well, if you take money out of the equation, have the same society where you would have, they'd still tick off the inventory at the turnstiles, but they wouldn't take the money. You see what I mean? Because you'd have to be accountable for your supply, your inventory. And if there's production, you have to be measuring or keeping track of the inventory in the warehouse when you make things. I mean, that's just common sense, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think, you know, when people are thinking indirect trade, most of them are probably thinking about the Native American Indians and wampum and stuff like that, I guess.
Right, the wampum was actually the first medium of exchange for the Indians. It wasn't part of indirect trade.
Right, and back in the early, the very early days of, call it civilization, but when you're talking about, trying to plod my way through it, because some parts are interesting and some parts are so tedious, but I thought he did a good job with London. Sarum is, maybe I'll be getting to interesting parts. So far, I'm around 1139.
Let me just, for instance, sure. And then continue. Don't lose your train of thought, please. For those who aren't aware of Edward Rutherford, he wrote some books about history and what have you, but he's a James Michener-like writer. Well, he'll mix fiction and nonfiction. And then people probably don't even know who Michener is any longer. Because remember, I had pointed out years ago and predicted that he would not be known because he mixed fiction and nonfiction together. I mean, that may be a popular theme these days. I don't know. But I haven't kept track of it for a while.
There's a lot of authors that do it. They write these historical novels, but they're novels. So that, you know, they try to get as close as they can with historical facts, but then they intermingle fantasy with it. You know, they develop a storyline through fictional characters. Excuse me, I had a problem with that word for some reason. But they have characters that are not real, but they intermingle with them and with the historical facts as much as they can get the historical facts, and they create a story, and they make it interesting. Some authors are better at it than others, but Rutherford, I haven't read anything recently that he's written. These novels, London and Sarum, were written at least 20 years ago, and I think he's probably in his 60s at this point because he looks pretty young on the cover. So what I'm saying is that he's sort of like the British Michener. But then, you know, you have people that develop these stories too, because there's Philippa Gregory, who wrote the book The Other Boleyn Woman, which is a story about the other Boleyn sister, the other Boleyn girl, that's what it was called, who was a story of Anne Boleyn's sister. that they were trying to marry to Henry VIII first, apparently. And, you know, so that is probably, that's a novel as well. I don't think it's actually listed as a, you know, historical fact. But she's written a lot of books like that. So,
the reason I mentioned that is that it's risky because people are afraid to quote it because they don't know what the fact and fiction is. You see, albeit it's mostly history, could be fictional anyway in terms of a reporter's viewpoint. In other words, it's relative. That's why people hate to study history, because they consider it boring, and at the same time they know that it's not necessarily, it would be their viewpoint of the same situation. See, that's the undertone of the whole problem.
Yeah, it's the way that history is taught. I mean, I think history is fascinating, and if history were taught, you know, in a more interesting way, most of the time the professor's just trying to jam dates into people's heads, and at least in the high school level, maybe in the college level, it gets a little more interesting. But it's more interesting when they talk about the different factions and get into the depth of why these events are taking place. That makes it interesting.
But at the same time, they're just reporting events necessarily that are relative in terms of their importance at that time in history. There may be other points that are more important. That's why, even to try to bridge that in terms of our topic, I target the 1930 Geneva Convention, because I consider that relevant to present time because of the results of the monetary system. The money that we use are a result of that convention. All right, so history, if the information is a result of what we're doing presently, it may have some relevance, but if it's just a chronological essay or viewpoint or explanation of history, then that could be still, like I said, it's relative from the reporter's viewpoint. For example, Napoleon, remember, the Vincent Cronin wrote a biography of him, probably at least 20 or 30 years ago. I'm not certain when it was. I don't remember the date the book was written. But Cronin was the first one that was not an enemy of Napoleon that had written a biography, and there were several written about Napoleon. So you had this negative slant on him, whereas Cronin had a more objective view. And he even admitted that in his prolog, in the Prolegomena of the book Napoleon by Vincent Cronin. I recommend it because it's a more of an objective view. So
I read that book. I thought it was well done. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I did too. But what I'm saying is that there's the rub. I mean, in terms of what we even talk about on this show, as I'm saying, I'm trying to give the truth out as I see it. It's still my subjective view, but at the same time, I think it's stimulating. People say, well, the show is very good, we really like it. And I say, well, the truth is always stimulating as I see it. But at the same time, I know, for instance, the law that's used in the courtroom, I know trust law because I was doing that for a long time. And also, I understand the money situation and it's a resultant of that particular bankruptcy. And we've been in bankruptcy for a long time. But it's not well known, because we talk about this all the time, about the court systems don't recognize it because they're afraid of revolution. And we're hot off a lot of revolutions in the past couple centuries, so people are very nervous about that. See, infrastructurally, maybe not objectively or consciously, but there's kind of an undertone or infrastructural issue about revolution. Because it happens in societies, and when they go down to destruction. And I'm not saying it's happening now, because I'm not a doom and gloomer by no means, because I still think we have a long time in dealing with our system. And whilst we're here and whilst we're alive, I think we should probably do the very level best we can to get into equilibrium with it. I mean, that's why I have my shows on Sunday morning, to try to disseminate information that can be progressive for society and not retrogressive. When we have a system that's really a dying system versus a living system. I've changed that view from a death system, because people can't understand why I say death. It sounds like debt, D-E-B-T. B as in Bravo, versus death, D-E-A-T-H. It's hard to hear that. So when I say dying, then you can hear it better. It's kind of like the idea of trustor, trustee, and trust law, where it gets mixed up. They think the trustee is the trustor. So then they changed it historically to the name creator instead of a trustor. And then they were Antrustians. So it can be a lot of confusion in language sometimes, in its tonality and the way it's pronounced and the way you hear it. There can be a lot of misinterpretations. So that's why I reverted recently to what I call the dying system, which is really really lofty and happy, right? It's very enthusiastic about that. But we do have that. I mean, that's what we have instilled in our culture, because the idea of man is mortal, and therefore why bother with correcting anything? Who cares if we're in bankruptcy? As long as we have purchasing power with money and we can buy things, don't be concerned about the fact that it's all debt, okay? And that nobody really needs to be responsible for it. That's a pretty pathetic idea, isn't it? And it really is. People are not talking about the fact that we're in a debt system. They're all talking about changes and adjustments in currencies and values of currency. And I'm laughing, going, you people are really wasting your time. They're lost in a morass of propaganda and nonsense and going in a big circle jerk in operations in society. That's what it is, one gigantic circle jerk going nowhere. And people bring me stuff all the time. I see things online. I review all these things. And I say, just forget about it. It's just—it's all cocktail party rhetoric, nonsense. It's a bunch of drunk people talking about stuff, and they haven't got a clue. They really don't. They have no clue about what's going on in the future. Whereas I think that I'm the recommendist. This show is the cutting-edge technology or information, and you need to stay with it, even though we goof around a lot, waste time sometimes on Sundays, and people are going, well, gee, don't waste time, Grant, and get to the crux of it. What's the crux of it? I've been talking about it for years. You like that? I'm hot to trot tonight, right?
Yes, you are. We're going to have to throw some water on you.
There you go. Well, it's always really cool to burn up 18 minutes. We got 12 minutes to blow. Well, it's fun sometimes, and I think when people stay with it, you can see a pattern here, you know. The weeks where we're just having a lot of fun and gibby-gabbing and whatever, that's okay, you know, it's time to rest. But then when we really get on it, we can see that there is movement forward just by our very presence alone. People get frustrated with things, but don't get frustrated, because the future is bright. It truly is. You just got to hang in there and stay with it. You know, keep on the mantra, wax increase, keep at it. Just keep on it and keep on it, and don't stop until you get some gain out of it. I mean, what else do you have to do? You know, we're alive here, so we're living in the world of perpetual increase, so go for it. I mean, I think so. I mean, when you learn something, when you become enlightened, you use the tool. Don't stick the tool in the toolbox. It's kind of like when we talk about raw veganism, and everybody can be raw. There's no reason why they can't. On the spiritual side, it's only a very small percentage that can get esoteric thought. But the other 99% should be getting what I'm talking about each week. Don't you agree?
Yes, I think so. But, you know, I mean, you can't, you know, everybody's, has their individuality and they're doing what they want to do, and you can only press something so far. So you have to let people have their freedom to choose. And even if we think it's a bad choice.
What? You say you can only trash things so far, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying people have the freedom to choose. So you have to let it be like that. I mean, you can present.
So what are they choosing? Don't you have to set up things for them to choose? Or they can't just choose hot air or nothing. See what I mean? There has to be categories and things that they can choose in society.
Mm-hmm. You can present. Yeah, you can present
what?
Everything to them. You can present these things to them. But people have to make their choices themselves.
Well, I didn't say they didn't. I never said that. I'm not saying take away people's freedom to choose, but then again, what are they choosing? They're choosing nonsense. I mean, what do they have in schools? They have this old tradition and craft that they've been passing on for years. Talk about trashing things. They've trashed every truth there could be possible, known. And then now what do we have nowadays? I have a friend that has a couple citations the other day, and the judge admitted that it was bogus, and the cop did too, but the judge said, I'll make a deal. I'll let you be innocent on one, but the other one you're going to be guilty. And the defendant said, wait a minute, you know, this is not right. But we discussed it afterwards. Said, well, they were trying to make some money that day. He had to make a down payment on some ping golf clubs, you know. In terms of I dropped my earpiece. Sorry, I dropped my earpiece. But that's the whole point. It's a revenue game. Everybody's in this mode of cookie cutter law. They're making revenue. It's just a game that let's put it this way, very few people defend themselves because it's a waste of time. It's comparatively disadvantageous to try to fight things because everybody's in the work-a-day mode, and they know that, so they have people paying fines on a constant basis. They just constantly churn out the money in a cookie-cutter conveyor belt money system. See what I mean? And people very rarely, because they'll pay the money. Just like years ago when the cars prices went up and the Carter administration, when inflation went to double digits, and then the cars went from 3,000 to 20,000 to 30,000. People were very upset for a few years, but they eventually started paying it. See, when people get anesthetized and get used to certain things, they just do it. They adjust all the time, adjust to a lot of negativity, just like we're doing in our court system now. At the same time, in the UK, they completely deny the UCC. My English people are always reeling on that, and I keep trying to prop it up, saying, look, it's still there, you got to keep at it. It's like tap, tap, tap. The Claude Bristles said, you got to, like a pneumatic drill, you got to drill at it. You got to keep at it. You can't tear the building down by yourself, brick by brick. You can't just tear it all down unless you're some kind of a, what's that, the guys that do the specialists. But anyway, that's important. You got to keep at things. You know, you can't give up the ship just because it doesn't happen tomorrow or the next day. You got to keep at it. It might take you years to do things. You see what I mean? So what else do you have to do? They live in a society that appears to be negative, but that it's an appearance. See, we create our worlds, and we have to take responsibility for it. That's why I do the show, to try to explain the basis of the Geneva Convention, why our money is the way it is nowadays. We have purchasing power, you have capability of it, but you need to know the truth in the matter of what's going on. Will it change anything? No, but it'll change people's awareness, and they'll be more confident to know that they're not victims of society. You know, knowledge helps one, like I said, you have theory, law, and practice. So practice entirely different than what you know. And that's okay, because what you know is a part and parcel of working with people in a non-adversarial way. Talk about the weather, sports, whatever you do in terms of your daily life and small talk or confabulation. See, that's important. But it doesn't mean it devoids the fact of your knowledge. You see, just sometimes you can't use it. You need to find forums like particularly this one or whatnot you can listen to that may be in the middle, so to speak, as I call it, or at least theorizing about some things that are getting more prone to the essence of the way things are. See, that is the most important part. So then you get knowledge that way. Imparting it, that's an entirely different story. Awareness of things, you can read a book and doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go ahead and explain it to your neighbor immediately. They're probably entirely uninterested, see? So that's what I'm always saying. I say agreeables and disagreeables. You have to find agreeable people in your life and nurture that. Nurture for all it's worth. A disagreeable, stay away from it. I know it's a challenge to deal with people that are disagreeable in people's lives. You know, want to get into polemics and arguments and you're going to case and good terms for argument. You see what I mean? But because it's like grist for your mill, you know, it gives you an adrenaline rush or whatever to get in there and challenge things. But if you do that on a constant basis, it's going to be just a lot of negative reverberations and problems, all right? And I'm not saying to be passive, quite the contrary, because I'm not that way. I'm a very active person, as you know. You've known me for a long time. And, you know, I'll stand up myself. I'm the first one to say things and not back off at all. At the same time, there are circumstances in terms of courage is is another topic, you know, that can be discussed probably at length on a whole show, because it really, in animals, it's observation. because they're prey or predator, and when they're prey, then there's a lot of fear with that. They don't want a fear of being eaten, so to speak. It's more of a neutral state more than it is an active state. See, so as a human being, we can be more active and be more aware of those states that we deal with on a daily basis. That animal is unconscious of, perhaps. You know, I'm saying that because I'm inferring too, like a lot of anthropologists and zoologists and what have you. They infer with the animals a lot of things, thinking they think how an animal would react and are experiencing things. That's a bunch of bollocks, you know, as they say in Great Britain. What's that? Go ahead.
No, I didn't say anything. I was laughing.
Oh, I see. You were laughing. So I was responding to laughter. That's good.
You're responding. I was responding to what you said, and you're responding to my laughter.
Well, but it is in terms of just all the things that we need to question things that to progress. You know, we need to fight the battles that we can fight. A lot of it is a lot of timing and contracts, laws, paperwork. People aren't listening. Their attention level is poorly in that realm of a listening capability. Most people are aphasic. They have some form of attention deficit disorder. They don't want to admit it. I mean, that came around. People have poor attention level. That's like when you're having a conversation, you should ask people, say, do you understand what I mean by that? Not every other phrase like Joe Frazier. You know what I mean, man? You know what I mean, man? Now that's silly. That's all rhetoric and stuff, nonsense. I'm saying that periodically when you're talking to somebody, you should ask them, did you understand what I'm talking about? And try to get some feedback that way, because a lot of people are just not paying attention. You see what I mean? That is the problem, of attention level in school and everywhere else. And the drugs are no help with that. That doesn't help people's attention level. They become more aphasic and spaced out. That's why we're getting more autistic people. Autism means a person's, the essence of somebody's outside their reality. See what I mean? They're not paying attention. They're not focused. If you know any autistic people, look them in the eyes. They're not paying any attention. See, when you talk to people, look them in the eyes. Look directly in their eyes. And the best way to do is look in the forehead, and you can see the peripheral of somebody's eyes. Look directly into a person's soul and get them riveted on what you're saying. If you have their attention, they may be comprehending. Who knows? But these things are in practice and learning how to have good oral dissertation with people in terms of communication skills is really very important, extremely important. And we need to do that in terms of progression and education and just all the things that we need to do and express ourselves on a daily basis. All right, well, thanks for being on the show this week, Gabrielle. I really appreciate you being here. It was a lot of fun. You know, I got on a decent roll after yesterday's work. I guess you were concerned about me.
Yesterday?
I was partly
asleep. Oh, I understand, but that was a different show, so that was another show, so we can't refer to that in this show.
Yeah, there's you don't have to be concerned about it. I mean, one day I run, I feel like I'm ancient. The other days I run, I feel like I'm 20. You see what I mean? So that's the nature of the raw vegan world, people. It's miraculous. It's great stuff. Anybody can do it. It's really wonderful. I highly recommend it. Going on my 10th year as being 100% raw vegan. Raw vegan, not just vegan. People hear the word vegan and they react to that. Talking about attention level, they don't hear the word raw. We often talk about that, right, Gabrielle?
Yeah, it's true. They don't get it because they're really, but I mean, they're actually a lot. I know you said you were shopping today, and you saw a man whose cart had nothing but fruits and vegetables in it, and you asked him if he was raw vegan, and he'd been eating that way since July, and he said he lost 40 pounds. Is that correct?
That's
you were
correct,
telling
but
you
I'm going to have to go here because we're getting down to the last few seconds. I'm sorry I entered a topic that's going to take 10 minutes, but we can talk about that next week. It's a good topic. So thank you for raising that. We'll talk about it next week. It's a very, very good idea. So we're getting down to the last few seconds. Again, thanks for being here, and all the journeymen and new people, thanks for being here. This is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show. We'll see you next week, and have a great week, too. Wax increase, and goodbye for now.